Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode and the entire rest of this season is brought to you by Pregnant Together. Listen, if you are looking for queer community in the parenting world, this is the place for you. Pregnant Together is a virtual community for queer folks, solo parents, and anyone who has ever felt outside of the box through the process of growing your family. It is run by queer midwife Maria Goodman, who I've interviewed. Great episode. Go check it out. The community offers tons of resources for every stage of family building, from trying to conceive to parenting. You get monthly live support groups. You get access to advice from a queer healthcare provider. And best of all, you get connection with a community of folks going through the same ups and downs that you are. And listeners of the Queer Family Podcast, y'all, get that first month for free. So you're going to click the link in our show notes to get your free month and get started now. Check out www.pregnanttogether.com.
Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
From my experience speaking with ranges of families, ranges of donor-conceived people, different eras, different, you know, egg donation, sperm donation, embryo donation, there's a complete spectrum of experience. So I would just sort of acknowledge that. So like while I'm talking, you know, I don't speak for everybody that's donor-conceived. Right. And I would certainly say if you're the best thing to do is trying to get a range of perspectives. If it's something that's worrying you or right. You want to learn more about, is just try and listen to lots of different sort of perspectives.
Welcome, my friends, to the Queer Family Podcast, the show all about family, but with gay. My name is Jamie. I'm your host, as always, and you, my beautiful friends, are tuning into the show whose mission is and always has been to celebrate, uplift, highlight, and normalize LGBTQIA+ families in all of our beautiful identities. And this episode does just that. Before I tell you who our guest is, I have to say a huge shout out and thank you to our newest Patreon members. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Ivan Delgado. Yes, go ahead with your bad self, Ivan. Thank you also, Ash. Ash, thank you so, so, so very much. And lastly, but certainly not leastly, thank you, Charles Wyzoff. All of you are helping make this show a possibility, and I am immensely grateful for you. I hope you like the bonus content you see over there, and I just hope you like supporting a little show that could, like the little engine. Yes, yes, yes. And if you'd like to join Patreon, just go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast, find a tier that works for you, and join this lovely community. I appreciate you all so much. Okay, so let me talk to you about this week's guest, this interview that's coming in. I had the pleasure of sitting down with Haley King. Y'all, when I say I leaned in a little closer when I was interviewing Haley, I am not lying, because Haley happens to be one of those folks who is donor conceived. And when I say donor conceived, like donor conceived from the 80s, like one of the first, and also happens to be a gay mom who also used donor conception to create her family. Oh yeah, we are full circle here, y'all. And the thing that's interesting about Haley is from a mom and dad family and did not know she was donor conceived until she was 30 years old. I'm going to let that sit with you. So she has wonderful and beautiful insight and perspective on donor conception and everything that goes with it. We had such a awesome conversation. And it really did start turning into just kind of like parenting our donor conceived kids. And also when it comes to like, as our kids get older, how do we handle these conversations? And how do you talk to the donor conceived sibling families? All these things that you don't think about when you start the process, and how the conversation gets more and more complicated as you go. And there are like such a lack of resources for our families when it comes to this kind of stuff. I mean, there's this podcast and then there's Haley's resource, which you're going to hear about in this podcast. And everybody needs to go check out everything Haley is doing because it's doing a world of good for our families and donor conceived people in general. Anyway, so before I roll that tape, it's an awesome episode, but I just want to remind y'all that I have a new thing happening on Patreon. I'm calling it Cheers for Queers, y'all. So every second Thursday of the month, I am hosting a Zoom with my Patreoners. You grab a cocktail, we sit down, and I will think of a topic of what we're going to talk about each week, and we will dive deep. I'm thinking this week, which is this Thursday, y'all, I think we're going to dive deep into donor conception because it's really, really on my mind. So join Patreon and come to my Cheers for Queers coming up, y'all, on Thursday, 3/14, March 14th, 7 p.m. EST. Can't wait to see you all there. And then before I roll the tape, just want to talk about something. I just got interviewed on a prominent parenting podcast just for my expertise in parenting, which I don't know why anyone would ever interview me about parenting, but hey, that's what happened. And this one looks through parenting through mindfulness, which once again, probably not really me for that. But anyway, I'm not the spokesperson, but you know, and so I was ready to talk about, you know, how I yell at my kids and I'm not the most mindful, but that wasn't the questions I was asked. It was mostly about questions regarding talking to our kids about LGBTQIA plus identities and pronouns and all the things, you know, not to feel tokenized, but maybe a little bit tokenized. And it was interesting because I just kept coming back to the same thing. The questions, they were all different, but they were all to me kind of the same questions. You know, she was asking, how do you talk to your kids about pronouns? And how do you talk to your kids about sexuality? And when is it appropriate to talk to your kids about sexuality? And when is it appropriate to talk to your kids about different identities? And I just kept saying over and over again, like, right away, you know, like on our show, we know we don't have the privilege of waiting to talk to our kids about sexuality because it's in their face. You know, they have two moms, they have two dads. So it's in the conversation from the get-go, you know, and I just kept coming back to this. And well, how do you talk to your kids about pronouns? And I just kept saying, well, when somebody tells you who they are, believe them. It's none of our business, you know, and I forget that the rest of the world is not thinking about these things as much as I am and like everybody who's listening to this show is. And I have to remind myself that. And then it was just an interesting, reckoning where the rest of the world is versus where we are, honestly. Not to say that we're more evolved, just that it was just interesting that I was being asked these questions and I kept thinking, well, duh, you know, it is what it is. Anyway, so that just happened. So I'll let you know when that podcast drops, if it ever does. I don't know. I should never be considered an expert on anything, which I am not. And I told her that, but she kept asking me these questions. I was like, I don't know. I'm a cisgendered white lady. Like, I don't know how to talk about pronouns, except when somebody tells you who they are, believe them. You know, like, I'm not an expert. Anyway, so if you do listen, listen with a grain of salt, please. Anywho, all right, it's time to roll this tape. I thank you all so much for tuning in. I'm feeling much better this week. Thank you for asking. And once again, thanks to my wife, Ann Woods, who held down the fort when I was sick in bed for almost a full week. I love her and I love you all for continuing to tune in, even when I show up, toe up, and sick as a dog. All right, let's roll this tape. Helen, Nicole, Beulah, my lovely assistants who really did step it up while I was sick as well. I mean, soup, tea, anything I asked for. Hot toddy, Helen was right there with the hot toddies. Helen, Beulah, Nicole, please, my lovely assistants, only one of whom really exists, please roll that tape.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
Hi, Haley.
Hi, Jamie. How are you?
I'm good. I am really excited to be speaking with you. I'm like super excited. I feel like I've been waiting for this.
Well, thanks for having me on. I'm a huge fan of the podcast, so it's a bit surreal to be here speaking with you. So thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm a fan of you, so it's mutual. We're going to go right into your 30-second elevator pitch, because if I try to explain pressure. Who you are, I'm just going to mess it up. So let's just have you do it for us. All right.
Okay.
On your marks. Get set, go.
Hi, so I'm Hayley King. I'm from the UK, if you can tell from my accent. I was conceived back in the very early 80s, thanks to pioneering IVF treatment. My parents were one of the first to go through early trials at Bournehall Clinic in Cambridgeshire, a few years after the first ever IVF baby. So it was a celebrated story growing up. But what I didn't know and what I found out very late in life is that not only was an IVF baby, but I was conceived using an anonymous sperm donor. So I was told this in my early 30s, was a huge shock. And then since then, I have actually gone on to do lots of public speaking about my story. And in a crazy twist of fate, I'm also the mum to amazing twins, thanks to donor sperm IVF with my lovely wife. They are nearly seven. And like I say, my story spiraled on from there, really. Do a lot of talking about this subject, and more recently became director of operations for Paths to Parenthood, which is an online support platform for parents via donor conception. So that's kind of me.
Oh my God. You went a little over, but I don't hate you for it because you have a lot. I mean, you're like, you run the gamut for all of the stories we hear on my podcast, you know, like.
Yeah. Condense 40 years into 30 seconds is quite hard.
It's hard. Yeah. It's hard. I mean, we had to get through a lot there. I mean, we have to go through your whole life. I mean, I knew kind of in a nutshell your story, but I don't know the specifics. So let's just like dig in. Let's go to take it to where you want to first take it.
Ooh, okay.
Because I know you had the shock that happened in your 30s. I don't know if you want to take it before that. Like,
I could take you right back, really. I mean, my story, I mean, I had a wonderful childhood, great family, very loving, you know, mum and dad, still very close to them now. Raised an only child. Back in the day, it was called a test tube baby. That's what they used to refer to it as. And it was an unusual story, I suppose. But one of those things you bring up like at parties and stuff is like, I was a very early IVF baby. But yeah, then it was, I suppose it was something that I was aware of growing up. And it was quite an unusual thing because someone of my generation, it was very unusual to have IVF, you know, to be someone born through IVF. Used to hear lots of stories from my mum at the clinic. Like, she used to get stuck in through the back door at Bournehall because they had reporters and stuff out the front because had a lot of anti-IVF and fertility treatment type campaigners at the time and lots of religious groups, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. So I kind of grew up knowing about that. But yeah, like I say, it was a huge shock to kind of find out in my 30s. So like I say, fast forward 30 years. And sadly, it came out in a family argument about the truth about my dad. And I was devastated, really, because he, you know, I still am a complete daddy's girl, very, very close. Aww. I just totally, if you can imagine the most out of left field thing you could be told, it was that.
Wow.
And that was kind of that, really.
Yeah. What do you mean by a family argument? Like, it just like...
It was just a bit of a challenging time in our family's sort of relationship at the time. I was involved in a very nasty accident at work whilst working for the police. So I was a police search and recovery police search diver.
Oh my God. Okay.
I got injured quite severely back, say 10 years ago now. So that actual accident ended my career. And I was very unwell. I was living at home with my parents. My wife and I were together, but just because of, obviously, I had to have surgery and a few other things, I needed some help at home. And I think tensions were frayed and just, it kind of just came out one day. And I spoke to my dad about it and he just told me everything. He just said, this is the story. Back in the 80s, we were told not to tell you, you know, that was best practice from the doctors, if you like. And of course, you could never have foreseen the advancements in technology with commercial DNA testing and everything like that. So that's kind of how it came out.
That's tough. That's a lot. And, you know, we talk about on this show all the time how important it is to be open and honest. Yes. And, you know, you're a testament to that.
Yes.
But wow. So they had to use donor sperm because they just couldn't get pregnant with your dad's sperm.
Yeah. So my dad was pretty much infertile by their standards back then. So, I mean, he did have sperm, but there was just no movement there from what I understand. So, but my mum also had fertility problems. So she'd gone through multiple sort of IUI treatments. So she'd taken the trip up to London and all the rest from where they were living at the time. And none of that worked either. So and they were very fortunate then to get on. So they were running very early IVF treatment, had to pay privately, obviously. And my mum worked for a firm, an American firm actually, that gave out health grants, which was unheard of in the UK, you know, back then. Wow. Uh-huh. And she was able to go and have treatment, like I say, with Patrick Steptoe and Robert Edwards, which were the, you know, these amazing doctors, pioneers that were kind of doing this treatment. It was like a last ditch attempt, I think. And at some point, obviously, then I think they've established that, you know, that there's no point using my dad's sperm. So they used an anonymous donor, but my mum wasn't told anything about the donor other than that he might have been a medical student with similar colouring to my dad.
Oh, wow. So there was no choice. Was there was no like...
No catalogue or...
They
no,
were just
no
like, we're going to get you pregnant. Hold on, yes. Let me go grab something.
Like, yeah, and it was just like that. My mum wasn't given really any information. You can imagine, Jamie, back then it was kind of... Like my dad wasn't even really involved in the process.
Right,
mum was the patient. My mum got treated...
Wow.
And that was kind of it. I mean, my dad was aware, obviously, but yeah, at this point, my parents have been trying for a family for, I think, for 7 or 8 years this point.
Talk about a severe disconnect, like between these doctors, scientists, and just people. Like, are you kidding me? You just grabbed some sperm and threw it in. Like, what? It's crazy.
I know. And I think it would have been quite exploratory back then. I mean, I'd be really interested if anyone's listening, that if there's anyone kind of born early 80s from IVF through donor treatment, I'd love to hear from you, because I've not come across anybody older than me that was born through IVF donor sperm. And I've spoken to a few professional, like, you know, scientists here in the UK, and they were saying that it was, you know, obviously they had the early IVF, but then a few years later they introduced donor sperm as part of the procedure. So I'm not sure exactly at what point it was kind of introduced. So you can imagine, like you say, it certainly was no choice, and it was very much just led by the doctors. You know, this is the end game is to get you pregnant, I suppose.
Yeah, they look at it as a scientific formula, and the end goal is the end goal, and whatever you have to do, it doesn't really matter. It's like, you know, it's an experiment, it seems like. Sheesh. Yeah. Oh my God. Okay. So, God, your parents held on to that for 30 years. That had to have taken a toll on them too. I can only imagine.
Yeah, I think they kind of buried it as well, though. I think they were kind of told, you know, not to talk about it, go away, forget it ever happened. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it must have been very challenging to keep.
We haven't gotten into your family yet, so I don't know who birthed, but you know, the non-bio parent, you know, there are so many feelings that can come up as a non-bio parent, and your poor dad had nobody to talk to about it, nobody to reach out to. It's just crazy how, I'll say it again, the lack of disconnect of feelings and emotions that, you know, happened with science. But it's great that you were made, which is awesome.
Yeah, and like I say, I mean, of course, I don't like to brush over the late disclosure, but I mean, I'm very proud to be donor conceived. And I always say my dad is the most wonderful man, and it would have been an absolute travesty if he couldn't have been a parent, because he is wonderful and he still is. And I'm so grateful that somehow the world collided in some weird way that enabled me to be born from and raised by, you know, by my mum and dad like I was, you know.
Yeah, so, fate, meant to be, meant to
I
be.
Hope so. Yeah, that's how I like to think of it. But
Wow. Okay, so Haley finds out at 30. That you're donor conceived, and you don't know much about donor conception at this point. So take me down the path. Like, what happened?
Do you know what, Jamie? I just didn't really know what to do with the information. I didn't know anybody that, I mean, I ended up Googling it, literally Googling donor conception. What does this mean? I wanted to find some information, but there just wasn't any. And I actually called the clinic. So I phoned Bourne Hall, because it's still in existence today. And they were pretty much like, oh, don't really know what to do. You know, there's no records, because obviously I was born was way before any regulation here in the UK, like a decade before any regulation was introduced. Right. It was always like, we'll put you in touch with, you know, Susan the cleaner, because she was here in 1980, you know, that kind of thing.
She probably put the cup in the bathroom for him.
Oh, don't go there. But it was like tumbleweed. And the only point of contact that they were able to give me, it was actually wrong, because it was for people that were born after regulations were introduced.
Wow.
So I kind of stumbled across Facebook groups, and I know it sounds a bit, you know,
a lot
kind
of us
basic
do.
In that sense. But yeah, that's how I found support, really, was through Facebook groups. Going back to my accident, I had so much going on in my life with my health and my career, and, you know, I didn't know what was going to happen there. And I think my brain almost just went into like, right, I can only process so much at one time. And I kind of didn't really do anything more than the contact with the cleaner from Bourne Hall, you know, after that, for a number of years, actually, probably. And it was actually even kind of when my wife and I went on to have our family, mm-hmm. we kind of explored a little bit there again. But then again, I didn't really, really look into it, I think, until our kids were about 2 years old. So I could say there was a significant time, I think, where I yeah. kind of just buried it myself a little bit. Yeah.
I mean, and that's to be like expected. You need time to like process these yes. really, really deep emotions. Like yeah. what your whole world is just thrown upside down, it seems like.
Yeah.
Ooh. So that comes out and then you and your wife get married. I don't know if you're married. I mean, obviously yeah, you're married because you said wife.
Well, the other half, the better half, yeah. yeah. So we had a civil partnership in 2013. So we couldn't legally marry in the UK then because right. we didn't have marriage equality, but we were fortunate enough to have a civil partnership, which is essentially the same. And then it was a couple of years later that happened. And then a few years after that, we decided, yeah, we'd like to start a family.
Okay. Now let's talk about the discussion on how you were going to create your family, especially considering the rocket ship that was just thrown at you about yeah. your conception. Let's go down that path.
One of the big things that was important to us both, I think, was just making sure that any donor that we decided to use was an open idea 18 donor or maybe a known donor, that someone that was known to us, just because mm-hmm. I felt, even though I hadn't really explored who kind of my donor, like my genetic father, if you like, was at that point, I did acknowledge that, you know, I was curious about who he was. And we wanted to make sure that our children would, if they were curious, that they could have the opportunity, should they wish, to have mm-hmm. that info. And in the UK, it's a legal requirement anyway. So that was kind of a bit of a tick box. But to be honest, Jamie, I know it sounds bizarre, but we didn't really go massively into it. We kind of looked, you know, we did the normal thing that, like, you know, gay couples do, and went on the websites and looked at the donor options. We did consider a known donor, but there was lots. The one guy who is lovely, but he had some health problems, and mm-hmm. we were still quite nervous, I think, because of sort of gay rights and things like that, whether there would ever be any challenge to custody. And
yeah.
So we ended up, like I say, going through clinic treatment, actually, and using an open ID 18 donor. And my wife did the hard work. She carried and we used her eggs. So yeah, so I'm the non-bio, non-gestational parent as well.
You know what it's like to be the non-bio. Yes. Now you really get it with your yeah. dad. Like you totally can, you guys can powwow about it. How amazing is that?
And he's been my biggest kind of reassurance to me actually on this path. So becoming a parent actually, like a lot of, I know, like working with parents now, like I do, a lot of the, you know, the non-genetic or the non-carrying parents do feel a lot of insecurity mm-hmm. or feel very threatened by the concept of this other person, the donor. Mm-hmm. But actually, I think my dad has taught me so much in the sense that, like, I can't honestly imagine having a better childhood, a better father, the most wonderful guy. And we share such a strong bond. So I know firsthand, like I've got firsthand experience that I could have that connection with somebody that I didn't share genetics with.
Yeah,
so
which is amazing.
going into a family with my wife, being, you know, not sharing genetics with our kids, I kind of gave me that, I don't know, reassurance, I suppose.
I love that. That just touched me because I had so many insecurities because mm. yeah. I'm bio mom to one and non-bio mom to the other. I was so freaked out over it. And, yeah. you know. It's silly. It's not
It's a
silly.
Lot of unknowns. No, it's right. not silly. Yeah, it's a lot yeah. of unknowns, isn't it? And I yeah. think, I mean, not to say that I don't still have those little niggles. Like I mm-hmm. still do. I'm not completely like immune to them. Like I always give the example, my son, when he was about two, really clingy to my wife. And I was like, oh, like, is it because we don't share the, is it because I didn't, you know, didn't mm-hmm. carry the pregnancy? But, you know, it
yeah.
happens.
It's those little, they nick at you. That's yeah. a good way of saying it. They get you every once in a while. It's like, and they're so, yeah. they're quick and they come and they go. And, but it is something that is definitely worth discussing and bringing up more mm-hmm. than it is. Because I think that donor conception in the UK versus over here in the States is different. I think they're more stringent over there. And I think the US yeah. has a ways to go kind of with stringency, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
Can you talk about just like the donor choosing process? I know you said that everybody is open ID, which is how it is here now, finally. Like for us, you know, we can look at pictures and it's a catalog. And did you go through the government or did you go through, like, walk me down the path?
I mean, in the UK, you've got lots of options still, but it is very regulated, which I would mm-hmm. say obviously the US kind of that there isn't many regulations in the US, and it does vary between states, and there's still a lot of control, I think, from, if we're talking about sperm donors, from the sperm banks and the fertility industry. But in the UK, we have a regulatory body, the HFEA, which controls things. And even if donors are imported from abroad, for example, they have to meet very strict sort of standards. But yeah, they still have very similar processes, I suppose, that you would get if you went to an American sperm bank. So you still get your profiles. The only thing in the UK, they can be, depending on where the donor's from. So if you're using a donor from, like we call them like internal local donors, so donors that have been sourced from the UK, that it's very unusual for you to get things like baby photographs, for example. And that's more to do with our anonymity laws. We have obviously anonymity removed at 18 now, but there's almost strict rules in reverse at the moment, in the sense that donors can't be identified pre-18 through anyone that works at a clinic or anything like that. It's actually, say, for example, a clinic staff member or anyone connected to the clinic or HFEA licensed clinic was to facilitate contact or identity of a donor to a recipient, they could actually get in trouble with the law. It's very strict here.
Right.
So there's certain things like baby photos and things like that you wouldn't necessarily get. Essentially, though, you if you're going and using an imported donor, you will get access to more information from like a profile and things, yeah.
And then donor siblings, like how many families? I guess it varies from place to place, right? Same.
Yeah. So again, it's forever changing, Jamie, honestly. Like if I was to speak to you in a year's time, it might change again. But essentially in the UK, we have what's called a 10 family limit. So donors that are used within the UK are restricted to 10 families, not including their own. However, and I say this with a big however, because I think sometimes that's used as a bit of a red herring, because parents sometimes misinterpret that as that's 10 families full stop,
right? Yeah,
point blank. But it's not. So for example, if you use a donor from, so in the UK, for example, there's certain sperm banks that a lot of clinics will partner with. So they'll use donor sperm from the US and bring it into the UK. Well, it will be 10 families for the UK, but as we know, the US don't really have any strict limits. It could be 25 in the US.
And that donor can go to a different bank.
Well, in the UK, they can't. So a UK donor, we have, they're on about having more of an information sharing system to make sure donors aren't donating to different clinics in the UK. But yeah, essentially, there is no international database of donors. So to track them is still, you know, pretty much impossible, really, to make sure they're not donating to other clinics or privately or through Facebook groups. And they're still problems that the UK faces.
These are the things, though. Like these are the things we weigh when we're going to make our queer family, right? Okay, so with the anonymous donor, we have all of these things that we've just laid out: the amount of children that can be born, the donors can go here, they can go there, all these things, right? And then, like you said earlier, with the known donor, we have all the legality and all the stuff that we have to think about with that, you know? So every single choice we make comes with cons. You know, you got your pros and you got a lot of cons with every single 100%. Choice you make. And you have to weigh everything. And that's why everybody's decisions are so different. And that's why we get so creative with our families, right?
Yeah.
I'm preaching to the choir. First of all, the whole world needs to do better by LGBTQIA+ folks and include us at the table when we're talking about fertility and we're talking about family and all of these things. And then there needs to be some stringency when it comes to these donors and these banks that are making a lot of money.
And they are. They're making a lot of money. I think, and that's it. I think you hit the nail on the head, really, with what I feel very passionate about is parents, whether they're LGBTQ or not, but if they're needing to use a donor, having the information to make informed choices. Because I think currently, and it's getting better, but currently the narrative around donor conception is very much driven by the money in the clinics and the fertility industry, understandably, because, you know, if someone wants to start a family, where do they first go? They go to a fertility clinic and they don't necessarily hear the cons because... You know, and it doesn't, they're not always cons, but sometimes there can be like large sibling groups, for example, worldwide family limits and things. Like I say, I think as long as parents have got that information and they can make these informed choices, what I really can't stand, and I see it all the time, I get people contacting me saying, you know, I thought it was just restricted to 10 families. I've now joined this Facebook group and I've just found 50 families from all over the world and I had no idea. It makes me so sad because these parents had no idea until, right. you know, they've wanted to connect with siblings. And just by default, they've kind of joined this group and then found out that actually the information they got at the clinic was wrong or not given over correctly, fully explained.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, you know, Freya, who I've interviewed.
Yes, yeah, Freya, yeah.
You know, Freya talked in her last interview with me about how, like, she had this whole, her whole life, her moms gave her this whole story about the donor being a musician and like all this. And come to find out, because she met him, none of that was true. Not a single part of it, you know. So we really do just go on hope here that.
I know.
And that is scary, but also we have our beautiful families and we wouldn't change a thing. And also, holy shit, it's kind of scary.
Definitely. Yeah. And like, we don't, it's always like the cliche, isn't it? You don't know what you don't know. It's like you don't. And sometimes these things don't, like I've spoken to parents that, you know, and even my wife and I actually, and it so, sounds so bizarre because I'm donor conceived. So people think that like, I would have known everything, but I really didn't, still don't. People will say like, you know, about siblings. And I didn't really think about my kids having siblings in other families that much actually. And it was only when they were little and kind of going through my own journey as well. And then kind of thinking, oh yeah, actually. And I think that is another thing. Sometimes unless parents are kind of introduced to these concepts, it's so abstract, isn't it? I think until our kids are born, even like, you know, how are you going to talk to your children and all these kinds of things? Because you're going through the process. You haven't even got your little babies.
No,
yet,
you're not a parent yet. You know, you know, like you don't understand what parenthood is until you have that kid and you have your first night with like, it's like my moment was, it was New Year's. Our daughter had just been born. It's New Year's Eve. And we were sitting on the couch holding the baby at midnight with a glass of champagne that we were too tired to drink. And I looked, I looked to Anne and I was like, oh, this is what parenting is. This is it. Oh, and it's like home, you know, like you like drop into reality. Okay, here we go, right? But you have these like magic colored glasses on when you're going to make your family and you can't see that stuff. And to your point with the whole, you know, you don't know till you know with the siblings, right? I didn't even think about the siblings. I didn't think about the siblings at all. I wasn't worried about the siblings. I also naively was like, oh, please, our kid's going to have two moms. Like, who doesn't want that? Like, they're not going to miss not having a dad. Who cares? I was so naive and silly, but I was, you know, because I'm basing it on my own experience and how I was just really close to my mom and my dad and I weren't as close. And I was like, yeah, they're going to be like me. Not at all. Yeah. Then they start asking about dad and I'm like, gosh, oh boy, here we go, you know?
Yeah.
So you can't predict these things, but our situations are complicated and they call for ongoing conversations, ongoing honesty and ongoing fears that we're doing it wrong.
Yeah, basically. Nailed it.
Right? Like every time I bring up the donor, which come, you know, I do the thing, I think I commented on one of your posts recently that you had this beautiful post about sharing information, age appropriate. And I don't remember what it was, but I commented like, yes, yes, drop those seeds because that's what I do. I drop the information seeds. And when they're old enough to take it in, they pick it up and then that's a part of their story. But every single time I'm dropping a seed, the fear and the worry behind every single, you know, share is there. Like, oh God, am I doing this right? Am I doing this wrong? Did I share too much? How much is too much? Oh shit, I scared them. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
Yeah. And I think like going back to the post, right, what the kind of the idea behind it was, I get a lot of people almost go like the other way and they're panicking. They're not doing enough. So they're like, so you have the camp of the parents that
that's what it is,
are petrified to talk at all. They don't know what to do. They don't know how to start. Then you have the camp of the parents that are like almost to the point that, oh, I'm not talking about the donor enough. Mm-hmm. My child's not interested. I'm bringing the donor up and they'd rather run off and play with their friends and they're not interested. I'm worried that my child's worrying about it because they're not talking to me about it. Mm-hmm. And the idea behind it, I think, is sometimes is, we say talk early and often, but we don't have to talk early and often all of the time. Right. You know, it's kind of judging those moments to, like you say, drop the seeds. And
yeah.
I think eventually our kids do pick up on it. But yeah, it's really scary to do, but it's kind of frustrating because our kids couldn't care less, I think, sometimes.
Not at all. You know, like, because with these situations, first you drop the seed about the donor and they kind of take it in when they're finally, if you feel like, okay, we got that going. We got that conversation going. That's an ongoing thing in the house. And then it's like, oh God, the donor siblings, I have to drop that. oh God, right? Like they can't be shocked by that. So then it's like, how do we drop that? You know, and it's funny though. Like I keep dropping that because my son is like obsessed. He wants a little brother. He wants a little brother. Yeah. So I'm like, okay, that's a good opportunity. Okay, here we go. I said, oh, well, you know what? You might have a little donor sibling brother. He's like, no, I don't want that. Oh, okay.
Oh, right.
Well, I dropped the seed. There it is. But you
that's
know.
Perfect, though. Yeah. And I mean, that's, and I was like, when I speak, I do a lot of work in the UK with a lady called Dr. Abby Perlman, who is a child psychologist here, who's done a lot of work with donor conception families. And she says a lot of the time it is just, like I say, introducing it really slowly, but introducing the concept. Mm-hmm. So just the concept, because a lot of parents are like, maybe have joined Facebook groups even or aware of siblings and like, how do I talk to my children about this?
Yeah.
And sometimes you don't have to introduce the, especially if you've got young children. I mean, yours are quite young, a bit older than mine, Jamie, but they're still young kids. So you don't have to just chuck everything at them. Like you can just introduce concepts. So just the concept like you did with, you know, with your son, that you might have a sibling out there. So you're just kind of giving this little bit of info and just letting their little minds process it. And then you'll probably have a question thrown back at you, you know, at some point.
Like if out of the blue, random question, right? And I'll be like, oh, you know, and then it's like,
okay, then caught me off guard.
Here we go. It's complicated, but also kind of, you know, that's the beauty and the nuance of our donor conceived families. I was going to say queer families, but you are a member of a donor conceived family that is not queer. So, and one that is queer. So I'm trying to be inclusive here.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, no, definitely.
Is there anything you would want to add regarding donor conception from your unique and very valuable point of view?
I would say that no one donor conceived person will feel the same. I think there are some themes potentially, but I think you hear a lot of strong voices online in different communities. And I would just always just try to bring people back to the perspective that from my experience speaking with ranges of families, ranges of donor conceived people, different eras, different, you know, egg donation, sperm donation, embryo donation, there's a complete spectrum of experience. So I would just sort of acknowledge that. So like while I'm talking, you know, I don't speak for everybody that's donor conceived. And I would certainly say if you're the best thing to do is trying to get a range of perspectives. If it's something that's worrying you or you want to learn more about, is just try and listen to lots of different sort of perspectives would be my advice.
That's why I always lean in a little closer when I talk to somebody who's donor conceived. I do have to say that most of the folks I've talked to who are donor conceived and who are adults now were raised by LGBTQIA parents and were told from the start, and all of them seem very well adjusted to it. And nobody I talked to had any issues except now you're my first one I've spoken with that had like that shocking information moment that so many donor conceived people have, you know. I have noticed in online communities, there are some really hurt donor conceived people out there who feel betrayed and who are really angry about donor conception and have come at me a couple times because I push it so much on my show. And you're right. It's really important to get all the perspectives because we all need it for whatever reasons we need it. And nobody should be denied something so special, you know, because somebody handled it wrong.
Yeah. And that's it. And I think like going back to kind of might be my generation, and it's just taking the learning points from it, isn't it? And making sure, you know, like I say, there's lots of things that my parents did incredible as parents, but there's lots of things like not just donor conception, but you look back, don't you think actually maybe we might do that differently in our family with our kids. And
So it's
looking at what's gone on in the past, isn't it? And I suppose that's why when I say like, you know, the voices online can be really uncomfortable sometimes. Yeah. They're uncomfortable for me listening to them because, and I don't really agree with some of the point of view, but I suppose I always do try to hold space a little bit because I actually ultimately don't know how my kids are going to feel. So whilst I feel how I do, my kids might have a totally, you know, raised by two mums, totally different family, you know, all this kind of stuff. And they may feel very differently as well. So it's just, like I say, but it's just trying to kind of, it's really challenging to do though. It's challenging, especially in the online space.
And also, you know, we turn into mama bears. We're protecting our family and we're protecting
what
we've worked so hard to create, you know, but it is very important to hold space. And I'm going to hold on to that, you know, every time I see a comment that I don't necessarily agree with, I can hold space because we are all entitled to our feelings and our truths. And that is very true. And now I have a question for you because I have kind of an interesting thing that has happened within the past year regarding our donor.
Oh, right.
Yeah, in that. Oh, and I wanted to ask you about donor siblings. Actually, can we ask that first? Have you looked into your donor at all? Have you looked into siblings?
I DNA tested myself at the end of 2019. Mm-hmm. Cut a very long story short, through genealogy and census records and things, I was able to locate. So my parents' donor, so my genetic father, if you like, call him different mm-hmm. things, but his name's Jonathan. He's actually a gay guy, which is amazing.
Yeah,
so,
go ahead, Jonathan.
Yeah, he's a lovely man. Medical student, so he's a doctor. He's retired now, but was a doctor. So that bit was right. Mm-hmm. So I found him. He's been very welcoming, very nice man. And I found three donor siblings through commercial DNA testing. Cause like I say, I'm an oldie, so there was no records for me.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was able to do that. And we've also connected with our children's donor siblings. So we've been in contact with their families since they were about 2 years old, a number of their families. But yeah, we've not made any efforts to kind of locate their donor or, donor that we've used pre-18 just because of the agreement that we've kind of made, I suppose, at this point. But that's a forever old. Yeah. I mean, as our kids get older, I mean, they're only young at the moment. I think that is forever evolving, that kind of topic as well. So who knows what's going to happen in a few years, but that's kind of where we're at the moment.
Yeah. Anonymity is hard nowadays. That's for sure.
Well, that's it. If you really, and this is what I would say is, we're getting, even just with like DNA testing alone, which is so powerful, and the kits are so cheap, everybody's doing them now. But even things like facial recognition technology, people can, if they've got adult photos of donors. I always say this to some of the clinics and things, is they're giving out adult donor photos, which I think is great in one respect, because it's helpful to have that mm-hmm. to give to your children. But parents are sticking them into Google image searches and facial recognition technology that you can buy for about 30 quid, and they'll scan the internet and find, hits across the internet.
I didn't even know you could do that. Holy moly. Yep. Wow. Okay. Yeah. So it's changing. Everything is changing.
Anonymity is very difficult to keep, and even anonymity till 18, to the point that our UK systems now, we have the open 18 IDs here, but they're on about, because of this, you can't promise anonymity till 18 anymore. They're on about actually removing it and have an open ID from birth, because they can't promise the donors, that this would be the case. So
no,
again, it's all changing quite quickly here.
Yeah. All right. So on that note, I got some information about the donor we used. I created a private Facebook group for the siblings. I was trying to find the other families, just to, see who is out there. And I've only found three or four families, mm-hmm. which I'm kind of shocked at. There have to be more. I can't imagine there's not more, but I've only found those. And one of the mothers, who's also a gay mom, private DM'd me and was like, this is kind of awkward to say, but just so as you know, we actually know him personally.
Wow.
We didn't get him through a bank. He was a friend. And we just knew that he had donated. So we, found you that way. And he says he's open to being contacted if you want to. And this whole, just threw me for a huge, gave me his name. And I'm like, whoa. And then sent me a picture. And it was a lot, right? And I didn't act on it right away. And we're still kind of processing it. And I did feel the need to kind of, my daughter, who's 10, my son is 6. So this is a lot of information for him, but my daughter, I am of the mind that if I have information, then she needs to have it too. Like if we have this, I can't hold on to this and let her know when she's 20, that wouldn't be okay. We knew who he was the whole time. Right. So I had to drop into conversation that, I actually learned this and I have a picture. Would you like to see? And, and she saw it. And then I said, we can reach out to him. We can write him a letter if we want. Nah, I'm cool. So that was that. But I'm really torn as to how to move forward. And the donor families want to get together, and we're talking about maybe having a gathering together. Mm-hmm. And I am fully on board for that. And my wife is a little less on board. So we're working through our feelings there. But in regards to contacting this donor, who I know is in contact with at least two of the families that we are, sharing this sibling space with. So I don't even know what my question to you is. It's just
it's complicated.
Yeah.
It's complicated. That's what I would say. Just listening to you talk, and you're like your story is very, I've heard different people with, you know, obviously different versions of that, but similar, you know, the connecting, because not only when you, that's the thing, when you do connect with sibling families, even if you aren't in touch with them regularly, they have information too. So they might have information on the donor. And then do you, like you said, what do you do with that information? How much do you, if you have information, do you share that with the families? It just become quite complicated because it's just not your little family unit then. You kind of almost got to consider other families. But I do think, like you say, just listening to you talk, I think going back with your daughter, I think you did, you know, for what it's worth, I think that was the spot on thing to do. I think she's probably old enough to understand a little bit of the situation and have a little bit of autonomy in those decisions. I mean, the sibling things as well, I would maybe say that to your daughter again, you know, we've got the opportunity to meet with some of these families, would you be interested?
Right.
And just, you know, see. But then I suppose the issue you might have at some point is you've got your daughter and then your son, and they might, and again with my kids, my wife and I spoke about this, we've got a son and a daughter, twins, and I can definitely see one of them being very, very curious and the other not.
right.
And it's like, how do you manage that?
Exactly. Yeah. It's so funny. Like, my daughter is not interested in meeting them because they're mostly boys, it seems like. Everyone we've found is a boy. And my son is like, none of them are his age, so he's not interested. You know what I mean? It's like funny. Like, they want what they want, a specific sibling. They don't want just any sibling. They want a specific one. It's so funny. Another mom DM'd me recently with the same information. I was like, huh, interesting. Have you talked to this mom? Because she has a similar story.
And you can imagine, though, this is why I think sometimes when I'm going back to talking about family limits and things, can you imagine doing that on a scale with times 10?
No.
And this is why I think, you know, it becomes very complicated. And this is what I always try to sort of explain when I speak to any, you know, people of influence, if you like, at clinics and banks. Mm-hmm. These are the lived experiences of families that are kind of having to navigate these discussions.
Yeah.
If you're creating large numbers of families from one donor and then people are being thrown into these situations, it just becomes really overly complicated than it needs to. It's just hard. And that's why, again, like, do a lot of work with parents, and through the platform that I work for, we actually in the process of creating actually a number of resources for parents when it comes to managing donor sibling connections, because there just isn't anything out there.
There's nothing. You're flying by the seat of your pants, literally.
Yeah. And we get people coming through the platform asking us for, like, help, really. Like, we want information. How do we navigate these chats with other parents? How do we talk to our kids, you know, when we're even, this is just siblings. This isn't, you know, the donor chat or anything like that. But there isn't the help out there, sadly.
No, there's not even, like, you know, I lean very heavily on children's books about all things our families. I lean so heavily. There aren't even books about the donor sibling connection, except that one, I've Got Dibs. There's that book. I don't like that book because it's so heteronormative. It bugs me. And I think they talk about Jesus in it too or something. And it's not
for me. Oh, do they? I don't think I've got that one. Yeah, I know what you mean. But there isn't that many books. Like you say, in terms of specific books for siblings, there isn't many. Some touch on it. But again, it's like even just having the wording and the terminology to bring in the concept is hard, isn't it? Because like you say, we rely on the storybooks quite a lot. And they're brilliant. And there's been lots of studies done into the efficacy of reading children's storybooks when it comes to donor conception and the benefits it can bring to the family. But it's almost like, what do we do next? There's not much next.
There's a whole gap. When they reach 10 to adulthood, like, what do I do? I don't know where to go. Like, how do we move forward? How do we move this ship forward so that we're constantly making sure that all the information is out there? I mean, I guess we do what we're doing, right? We're just open and honest and we continue to drop these seeds. It's just, there needs to be more. There should be resources. So that's really cool that you are creating that or have that. That's awesome. So we'll share that for sure.
I'm in the process of doing all the recording and all the resources. We've got quite a bit of it done already. I mentioned Dr. Avi earlier. She's been sort of my co-pilot with it all through Paths to Parent Hub. But yeah, as soon as it's ready, Jamie, maybe I'll send you you can have it and have a know, see what you think. But
oh my God,
the idea being is just we can direct people somewhere and just, you know, just give people a bit of confidence in what they're doing. So I think we're probably doing all right, most of us, you know, and like just need a little bit of confidence building that we're actually, what we're doing is okay, and maybe some pointers. And
it's also just like the normalization, right? Seeing it mirrored back to you, seeing other folks going through it, seeing, you know, like the reason that this podcast is important, the reason that your account is important, it's the normalization. The more we see it, the more normal it becomes and the less scary it is for even those involved in it, right?
Yeah, so definitely.
It is. It's really important. And on a funny note, you know what I found out about my donor? I keep getting new info. He's gay too.
Oh, there we go. The gays are taking over the world.
Go ahead. Go ahead with your bad self. I love it. So well,
that's
amazing.
Good. That's a good thing. I'd say that's a good thing. So that's brilliant though. Yeah.
I know. I love it. Oh my God. This has been so great. And you really are just an amazing resource for anybody out there. You have to tell everybody where they can find you because you are very active in the donor conceived community and you're doing great things and you're such a change maker and you're a badass. And I really appreciate that you're out there and that I know you.
No, thank you, Jamie. No, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate the, you know, the opportunity to speak to you. But yeah, if people want to find out a bit more about me, if you head over to allthingsdonorconception.com, that's my website, there's loads of free info and resources on there. And that's whether you're a donor conceived person, a parent or a professional. My kind of, that was my sort of latest baby was creating this website that people could go to. And like I say, get free resources, but also get signposted to more support if they felt they needed it. If you're an Instagram person, I'm on Instagram, not the easiest handle. Didn't think about this when I set it up, but it's DCP Journey to RP, which essentially is donor conceived person's journey to a recipient parent, which is a complete mouthful. So yeah, I'm on there too. And like I said, I've mentioned a couple of times the support platform that I work for, which is an amazing platform, which is founded by a lady called Becky Kearns, who's a mum through egg donation, but we've sort of joined forces the last year or so just to kind of bring the straights and the gays together for the platform. And that's Paths to Parent Hub. So paths2parenthub.com and it's Paths to Parent Hub on Instagram, where, like I say, if you want a little bit more support, we've got a community membership and lots of resources.
It's a really great, groups. It's a great page. You're doing a great job. You really are.
Thank
and
you.
And I really appreciate you kind of trying to meld the two communities because there is a huge disconnect here.
Huge.
Between our communities and we just don't give space for the other, it feels like sometimes. So it's a big job you got there. And I'm proud. I'm happy you're doing it.
Trying. Yeah, it is hard sometimes because we're all human, aren't we? So we all got similar kind of worries and things, but then very unique challenges as well, depending on our families and things like that. And it's just making sure that everybody gets heard a little bit and what their struggles are. And then making sure, like you say, if you can see it, you can be it, isn't it? That's one of the therapists that we work very closely with. That's like her favorite, you know, phrase. And it's so true, isn't it? It's like, you know, so that's what we try to sort of stick to.
Yeah. One thing that I, last thing, and then I can let you go, but one thing that I think about like a lot, and I say it a lot, and I said this recently to a straight woman who used donor conception she was single mom by choice, and she seemed to take offense to it. And I had to think a little deeper and think about it, but we're all saying things that, you know, we think and we believe and whatever. Right. But I talk about a lot how in the queer community, when we get to the point of starting to make this family through donor conception or adoption or whatever it is, it's kind of an exciting time for us. There's no mourning process. If anything, we mourned when we realized that we were gay and we were going to have to do it a different way back in the day, right? Whereas in the non-queer community, a lot of time they're mourning at the same time that they're starting this fertility process. And I do think that there is truth to this. And I think that in many instances in a lot of instances in the non-queer community, especially if we take it back years, there's the shame there. There's that shame aspect of having to go this route, whereas we don't have that shame because we knew it already. And then that kind of speaks to the amount of information that is shared or not shared with the children in some instances. Yeah. And I have to be careful who I say that to, I'm realizing, because I think she took offense.
I think you've got quite a good point there, Jamie. I mean, we talk quite a lot on the platform around genetic loss, and I've sort of had discussions like Becky will say it as well, who I work with. I didn't feel the genetic loss in this. I mean, there is elements of it in this, but it's a loss in a different way. It's a loss that my wife and I couldn't have a family together with both our genetics. The loss is there. The loss was, like you say, that we had to go to a fertility clinic necessarily. We couldn't just do it at home the natural way or whatever. That's
baby
the
dance.
Loss. Yeah, exactly. Do the baby dance and have a baby. So the losses are different. But then, I mean, I often say when I realized I was gay, you know, my teenage years, it was kind of an acceptance. I wasn't going to have a family. There was no, I could use donor conception. I just didn't, it was just kind of drew a line under it back in the 90s. You know, that was I didn't know any gay people that had children. It was kind of totally different era, you know, no kind of equal rights whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So actually going down the path for having a family with my wife was like, wow, actually we can do this and we have the opportunity. And it was really exciting.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think there is, whereas, yeah, like going back to my parents in a straight relationship, certainly back decades ago, the shame was there. And I still think, yes, there the shame sadly is still there even for our modern day families, because it's not the usual route or the route that was imagined that they would go on.
Not in every instance, but in many instances, you know, with like, if I wasn't gay, I would have just been like one of those people that just ticks all the box, like, oh, and then I did this. I got married and I had a man and I did the thing. Like, I would just be ticking off the boxes. I would never have to reckon with the fact that I am going outside of the norm. My queerness has forced me to go outside that box and like realize, oh, right. Like, there's so many other nuanced experiences. But if you haven't had to go there yet, it's a big hit. It can be a big doozy, one that folks are probably very much not prepared to handle.
Yeah.
Especially when you're about to become a parent and your whole life is going to be sucked from you.
Yeah, literally. And finances and all the rest that goes with it as well, isn't it? It's like, totally agree. I agree. It is very, like I say, there's lots of similarities, but there are some real unique differences as well.
Yeah.
And we've certainly had those conversations, like, just, and it's how best to support people when they're on, we're all essentially going to be parents and parenting, but kind of got there in different ways with different expectations and experiences. So
I say that the non-queers could learn a lot from us when it comes to baby making, because, you know, there's always a trial involved. There's always some challenge involved with our baby making. These conversations need to happen, and I'm glad you're facilitating them.
I'm doing my best anyway.
Yeah. No, I know. It's great. And I will be checking in all the time to your pages and seeing what's going on. And I just appreciate you. I really do.
No, thank you. Thank you for, like you say, and for what you do as well. You're bringing some great conversations out into the world. And it's like you say, it's just hoping that people can, like you say, they see themselves or they hear themselves and think, actually, yeah, I can do that too. And that's what it's all about, isn't it? And we're just trying to, still winging it, I think, as parents. I'm not quite sure. I still know what I'm doing on that front, but we might get there one day.
Definitely don't know what I'm doing. I am such a mess as a parent. But, you know, we take one day at a time, one foot in front of the other. And if I got through the day without yelling, I freaking won.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, Haley, this has been such a treat. Thank you so much for joining me from across the pond, so to speak.
Yep. No, thank you for having me. It's been great.
Love is love.
Whew. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, feel free to listen to another or watch another. I have so many episodes for your listening or viewing pleasure. Just go pick one and enjoy. There's a lot. There really is. And also, if you really do like this show, please, I know I say it all the time, but please do consider supporting the show on Patreon. You're just going to go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast. You're going to pick a tier, you're going to join, and you're going to get that bonus content. And you're also going to get my love and adoration for the rest of my life. I love you all. Thanks for tuning in. Keep on tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Mwah.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.